You are now entering the spoiler zone. The following podcast contains explicit plot details and pockets of profanity. You have been warned. The Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in wine and space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss.
Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
And we have, regrettably, lost Richard Franklin recently. So today's episode is a tribute to the man that most people know as Captain Mike Yates from Doctor Who.
And what we're going to do is a story that he's a little bit more front and centre in, because in the early unit stories that he's in, he's kind of a background character. Mm. He's a bit of a replacement for the Paul Darrow character in the Silurians, and he doesn't really have an awful lot to do than salute and look wooden. But from the Green Death, there were a few stories where he was a little bit more front and centre, and Green Death, Invasion of the Dinosaurs, Planet of the Spiders, it's kind of the fall from grace and then redemption of Captain Yates. And we're going to do the middle one of those. We're going to do Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Greyhound 1 to Track 2, over.
Prehistoric monsters turned up in central London.
They all started just after you, Doctor. There was some loss of life.
Soon the Doctor and his associates and everyone on this planet will never have existed.
Millions of people will be wiped out.
Brigadier.
Do you think you're doing, Doctor?
Good grief. Stegosaurus.
As soon as these creatures appear, we make sure that they're contained within the evacuating zone. According to my patrols, they seem to vanish. Just disappear. No one sees them come, no one sees them go.
The things that size, where could they go?
Back where they came from. Into the past.
I'm instituting a full-scale search for the Doctor at once. To shoot on sight.
Some vast scheme is underway, I'm sure of it. It's rapidly moving towards its climax.
You must have been selected, otherwise why would you be here?
I was brought here, kidnapped.
You've got to find him before General Finch does. Get the men ready.
Hang on to your hat, Lydia.
Before we do that, it's time to get out the tonic screwdriver and open a gin.
In his honour.
This time we are drinking Pocketful of Stones Pilgrim and Galaxy Hop Gin. It's 40% and this has come through our Little Gin Box monthly subscription. For those of you that have never heard of it, you pay your subscription and you get two doubles of premium gin sent through quite randomly every month. And they're always quite interesting. This is one of those, and the info bollocks says, Pocketful of Stones have taken the exciting Tasmanian-grown Galaxy Hop, a favourite with the most adventurous brewers, and releasing all its peach and passion fruit flavour, have paired it with the more local Pilgrim with its spicy citrus character. Then, adding a host of contemporary botanicals, this has allowed the distiller to produce one of their most full-bodied gins. So, first things first, nasal appraisal.
Smells like a compost heap.
Oh, do you know, I quite like that.
Yes, but you like beer.
And this... I'm not getting anything hoppy from that, really, if I'm honest.
It smells dead plant.
That I will give you, yes.
As you may be able to tell, I'm not enthused by the nose.
But this wouldn't be the first time we've been unenthused by a nose, but delighted by the contents. Eyes down, dive in.
Ew. No, I don't like that at all. It tastes like a compost heap.
It's sort of like... In the 80s, there was a craze for things like marguerite and elecampane and chamomile and things to make teas with. And I remember my mum had jars of this in the kitchen, and that is what that reminds me of. Dried flowers.
Compost heap. I don't like this at all.
It's different.
It's nasty.
There's a definite sharp aftertaste that develops after the first few sips. Not particularly keen on that. It tastes like a herbal shop smells. Ooh, there is quite a...
There's a nasty aftertaste as
well.
Yeah,
there is. That develops. I think I like it more than you do, but it's not one I'd race back to. Probably going to give it a 2.
It's a one from me. I really don't like it, and I don't want to drink the rest of this.
Gosh, mate, that is bad. It's an interesting experiment, but I don't particularly think it works. So at this point, it is time to open up the Black Archive and see what we can retrieve in honour of Richard Franklin.
Traditionally, with Black Archives for our In Memoriam episodes, we tend to do something that is featuring the artist in question. And looking at it on IMDb, Mr. Franklin's first screen credit was in an episode of Dixon of Dock Green.
Which surely can't survive.
I don't know whether the episode itself survives, because I'm not sure he had a particularly large part in it. But I think Dixon of Dock Green would be an entirely appropriate thing to return to the archives. Actually, I've just realised that I've said Dixon of Dock Green and assuming that everybody knows what it is, because it was a huge phenomenon. It was sort of like as big as Zedcars. And it was the story of PC George Dixon, who first appeared in a film called The Blue Lamp, but actually gets killed in it. And for some reason, they decide to resurrect a reasonably background character and build a whole TV series around him. And so for the, certainly for the 60s and 70s, it was quite cutesy little crime dramas. There was the occasional one where it was a bit darker and a bit more gritty, but generally they left that to Zedcars. Was it Jack Warner?
It was,
the lead actor. And Jack Warner always had his little bit to camera, well, this is what happened in Dock Green, and it just goes to show that you shouldn't try and electrocute a dog, or whatever the moral of the week was.
It was all quite, I won't say twee.
Cozy.
Yes, cozy is the word.
Yeah, and that word's been given a real upswing recently in terms of describing dramas. You've got your cozy murder mysteries, and you've got your cozy apocalypses. And
cozy apocalypses?
Yeah, things like Day of the Triffids are described as cozy apocalypses because most of the world's population dies, but actually we're quite British about it, really.
Those two words I've never heard put together, so you've educated me tonight. Cozy apocalypse. We're all about to die, old fruity, but don't worry about it. More tea?
Well, if my lovely friend from Chicago, Aaron, is listening, she's the one that introduced me to that. She's also an enormous Omega Factor fan. She and I met through the Omega Factor fan webpage on Facebook, and for a while we were the only two members. Tracking it back, Dixon of Dock Green was very cosy. My gran used to love this.
I've got to admit to never actually having seen a full one. I've seen snippets. I've certainly seen a couple of the introductions to camera. But I don't think I've actually seen one.
It's kind of like Zedcar's genteel uncle.
So on that, we are now back in the viewing room. It's time to watch another cosy apocalypse. It's episode one of Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
As promised, the Doctor and Sarah get back to London.
But why is London completely deserted?
The full-length Pertwee and it... To be honest, looks a bit wrong. Because I'm so used to Baker's face.
Yeah. But I do like what they've done with it. I mean, it's a very long and tedious way of doing it. They've got the Doctor-shaped time tunnel. And I do think that looks really well. I also like the sort of slit scan coming out of the screen at you opening that they ditched for Tom Baker. In many ways, I prefer the Pertwee title sequence.
No, you see, I was born and raised with the Tom Baker one, so...
Now, we are watching the recoloured version of Episode 1, and by their own admission, it's a fairly ropey recolour. I think this is one of the ones that they did using the chroma dots, and it doesn't entirely work, but it's there.
Didn't they do this on top of the success of Planet of the Daleks 3, but without as much of the budget?
With a fraction of the budget. This is all... auto-recovered using chroma dots that were buried in the black-and-white film transfer. I mean, don't get me wrong.
It looks pretty good.
It's not bad. But every now and again, parts of the frame, they go back black-and-white. Like on this, the left-hand side of it, it's not quite managed to get the colour of the trees, and there's framing all the way around it and fringing that's all in black and white. Pertwee's hair is all over the place. Liz Sladen's skin looks like she's just been dug up. But on the other hand, would you rather watch it like this or in black and white? I'd rather watch it like this.
Yeah, and hopefully by the time the Blu-ray team get round to doing this, then we'll have Planet of the Daleks 3 style recolorization and hopefully CGI dinosaurs.
I would love to see that. Now, Invasion of the Dinosaurs is one of those stories. It's always had a bit of a bad reputation, and the only reason that it has is
because of the crap.
Oh, the terrible rubber dinosaurs. They're like the plastic toys you used to get when you were a kid. The dreadful. We haven't had any yet. And actually, they take quite a long time to turn up.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go into this with a closed mind. I loved Invasion of the Dinosaurs last time I watched it.
Do you mean an open mind?
No. An open mind would mean that I'm willing to change my mind and reclassify it as crap. I really don't think I'm going to.
Oh, well, I am going into this with an open mind. And I've never thought it was crap because I've always thought it was a very good story.
First saw this on VHS when it came out, 20 years ago, whenever it was, and I was blown away by how good the actual story is. I was gripped. And for a six-parter, if you can look through the dinosaurs or look past them, you've got a real, real good, solid Pertwee here.
I think even with the dinosaurs, they don't detract from it so much that it takes away from being a good story. There's an awful lot of Web of Fear episode one in this whole bit to start with.
Wandering around deserted London.
Yeah. And okay, they're wandering around pedestrian level deserted London, and Web of Fear one was wandering around subterranean deserted London. But it's the same kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
And it's a TARDIS team that's very comfortable with each other. And bear in mind, this is only Sarah Jane's second story. Well, depending on whether you think the Jeremy stories are
canonical.
I think they're canonical because they were done by the BBC.
I don't think they're meant to be back-to-back. Paradise of Death certainly comes between Time Warrior and this. But Ghosts of Endspace is actually set a few stories down the line. It just happens to have the same cast.
Right. I mean, I've actually listened to Paradise of Death reasonably recently. I was very surprised how entertaining it was. I haven't listened to Ghost of Endspace in years. Now, if he's on the rob and he knows that there are police patrols and all that around, why doesn't he pull into that arcade? Because there's plenty enough space for the car rather than just leaving the car there with its door open.
Car door open doesn't look suspicious at all. And I don't think that a jewellery thief would stand examining the jewellery. He'd just skip it all into the bag. You know, much that I know about jewellery thieving.
Turn around. Hands against that wall.
Do as he says, Sarah.
Sarah, do as he says.
Yes, excellent advice with somebody rattled with a shotgun. Have we seen him wearing blue velvet before?
Not that colour of blue. I mean, that's very blue velvet.
I tend to think of him in either burgundy or green.
Well, the only blue that he wore was, good God, that's a bit of a graphic shot.
Yeah, it's a little bit bloody for
the burglar. The car's crashed and he's been thrown through the windscreen and he's led on the pavement dead with half his face scraped off, covered in blood.
Can you think of anything else more bloody in Doctor Who?
I can think any of other shock moments, but that was fairly unpleasant. This would have gone out on bloody tea time.
Yeah, I mean, there are nastier deaths, but are there more graphic ones?
Not actually seen on screen that I can, off the top of my head, no.
No, I'm quite surprised by that.
I mean, there's lots of questionable stuff in classic Doctor Who. The one that leaps to mind is Chase being fed into the grinder, legs first, in Seeds of Doom. There's Lytton having his hands crushed by the Cybermen.
Oh, that's true. That was quite graphic. Chase wasn't graphic at all. It was nasty, but only if you know that it's nasty.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, Lytton was...
That was launched on screen.
That was really quite graphic.
For all Colin Baker's era is, you know, derided, and it's no fault of Colin Baker himself, it was just the stories he was given, there are some bits in that that you'd never get away with now. Saturday tea time, pushing two people into an acid bath, and they try and crawl out of it, dissolving. Saturday night, tea time, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Hello?
I hadn't realised that Patty Russell directed The Massacre.
Got to admit, neither did I.
So does that make her the first female director of a Doctor Who story?
I think she was. I'm fairly sure she was.
Hmm. That's quite nicely done. His jacket is showing up very blue, isn't it? That's a proper royal blue. You should recognise that.
I shall. Anyway, Pertwee did him. He appeared post Doctor Who. He had several of the jackets because obviously there were two of everything. And Terry Walsh, his fight stunt arrangement, he used to mysteriously go home wearing the spare jacket. So Pertwee ended up having at least two or three of the original Doctor Who jackets for appearances that he kept at home. The purple one, I remember, certainly in the 90s, he wore that several times.
You see, there are bits of the pterodactyl that aren't great. I cannot and will not allow troops. A lot of it is quite sensibly and subtly done. Looters are not
our main problem. But again, there's a couple of things here. When the pterodactyl's attacking him through the window, it's such a close shot, you can sort of get away with it. And the rest of it is there's such brief cut shots that it requests that you use your imagination a little bit. But I think of all Doctor Who stories, this is probably the one that asks you to suspend your disbelief the most in terms of the special effects.
Kinder.
At the time...
I mean, okay, there's only one, but it is awful.
I'm still not quite convinced that the special effects in Kinder, and the other one that leaps to mind, unfortunately, is there's Kroll, and then there's the plastic dragon in Caves of Androzani.
Which serves no useful purpose at all.
You really shouldn't be in there.
Yeah, you could take that out and wouldn't affect the story at all. Look, will you please tell me what's going on here? Turn round! Oh, so they're military vehicles they're using.
Hmm.
Well, they've got military number plates.
Given the longevity of Land Rovers, they're probably still in service.
Having worked as a claims handler for motor claims, I know probably more than anybody needs to know about different types of number plates and what formats they have.
Ah, yes, of course. Your time in Belfast.
Age? Yes. The colourisation did some very odd things to Pertwee's hair in that last shot. Right. We've held for military trial. Over there for photographs.
Well, why are the military running everything? Come on, Sarah, let's go and have our photos taken, shall we? There are some very, very good colourisation programmes out there now. Because some of the ones up to now have been very, very ropey. They've been almost unwatchable. Yeah,
how long ago was this done?
I don't know when this was brought out. Let's have a look on the back of the case. This was...
2012.
Yeah, but I look at some of the fan efforts at recolorising stuff. There's been a few recently, the Space Pirates and the War Games, and even the Celestial Toymaker, which neither me nor you have any love for. The colour doesn't half bring it to life. And it's very well done for an algorithm. You'd be happy with it. You'd pay for it.
I'm not sure I'd pay for the Celestial Toymaker, to be perfectly honest. But I take your point about particularly the War Games. The recent stuff that I've seen on that is fantastic. And it's only a matter of time before colourisation will be an option on black and white releases.
I think that colourisations are on the way. But I would pay bloody good money to see colourised black and white Doctor Who. Now, this is something I can't quite get my head round. We've just got our first glimpse of the dinosaur, the T-Rex, and it's a fairly ropey effect. But episode 1 of this is just called Invasion, so as to disguise the fact that there are dinosaurs in it. They've used the dinosaurs in a fairly unremarkable scene, and they've wasted it, really. That scene lacked any impact whatsoever. Whatever's causing the monsters
is causing the interference. Well, except they'd already done the pterodactyl. It's one of those things. I can enjoy Invasion of the Dinosaurs and ignore the dinosaurs. I can enjoy the Ark, ignore the monoids. What other particularly dreadful stuff is there?
There aren't really many. For all that Doctor Who is lambasted for crap effects, there really aren't that many that you look at and think, that's a bit. Croutons?
Until you look at the skirt, they're fine.
Yeah, agreed.
Mechanoids, chumblies, they're not great, but at the same time, they're not absolutely dreadful either. People joke about blown up condoms in Green Death. Is that girly Maggie's reading?
Yes, it was a nudie magazine. Perhaps he was reading one of the life-enriching text articles that appeared with it. Oh, thank you, InfoText.
Oh, Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter. It's dreadful, but very entertaining.
Sounds like something Kenny Everett would have done.
Right, on your feet.
Hello, English military soldier here. What's your name, young rapscallion?
17781 and 17782, sir.
We do have names, you know.
All right, let's get on with it.
You look guilty, you're guilty.
It's a touch War Games.
It is. Oh, this scene was a parallel in Hulk's The War Games.
Anything to say?
We found those things after someone else had stolen them.
And you were going to hand them in?
Yes.
You've been 26?
26?
He's 26.
Bloody hell.
You've been found guilty of
he must have had a very hard paper round. Appeared 10 years later in Heidi High.
Put them on the next transport to the detention centre, will you? Yep. I must be off.
Attention!
Carry on, Sergeant.
Doing his best Winter Davies.
What was that idea? That you
very odd things are happening to Pertwee's hair.
He's got lava in his hair.
You're the narc, aren't you? It was you what grassed on us.
I never grassed in my life!
Very odd things happening to that bloke's face.
Yes, the colour restoration here.
He's either got a skull made of eggshell or...
This InfoTech seems unnecessarily obsessed with license plates.
Yeah, Moonbase 3 was after the Time Warrior.
I've still got Moonbase 3 here. We really should do that.
I really enjoy Moonbase 3. And up until K9 and Company, it was the only time the Doctor Who production office produced another show at the same time. He looks as though he's gone on holiday in between the two shots, because he was a bit tanned. It's awful.
Yeah, the Tyrannosaurus shocks. It leads into the...
There was no way of putting a gloss on that. It is awful. But the story is really good. The atmosphere that the episode builds up is great.
I just think it would have been better if, having gone to all that trouble of trying to conceal the fact that dinosaurs were in it, they hadn't used two scenes with dinosaurs in it before trying to shock with the cliffhanger that there were dinosaurs in it. But otherwise, that was actually very good. I enjoyed that.
We've yabbered over it because, hello, podcast. But there's also been big chunks of it where we've just been watching what's going on. And to be fair, most of the big chunks of where we've just been watching what's going on have been the Pertwee and Sarah Jane.
That is true, bits. Yeah.
It's really hard to believe that this is their second story because their chemistry is just spot on. And things like the bit where they're at the bus station, and it's just absolutely marvellous.
As with all Doctor Who's, we're going to give full commentaries on the first and last episodes, and we'll do a digest of episodes 2 to 5. So without further ado, Simon and I are going to disappear, watch the middle episodes, we'll be back with a recap. Episodes 2 to 5, in all honesty, are a lot of padding, but they're beautiful padding and very entertaining, even as we've just watched them back to back. Now, basically, it becomes very apparent fairly early on that pretty much everyone in the story is a mole or a double agent or up to something nefarious. And a fake spaceship, which this secret organisation have conned a load of people into thinking that they're on a spaceship bound for another planet, when in actual fact what they're doing is hiding these people away, convincing them they're on a spaceship on a way to another planet, while they roll back time on Earth to make it look like another planet, and save the human race from itself. And that's basically the summary of 4 episodes of Doctor Who. But I'm being incredibly cruel here because this is a really, really good story. I am loving this. There's a genuine sense of menace about the whole thing.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of plot strands going on. So you've got Sarah being investigative. You've got the Brigadier being brigadier-y. There's a little bit of over-reliance on the dinosaurs when the effects aren't really that good. But there are parts where it works really well. So the bit where Sarah is in the little office in that warehouse, and she's being attacked inside the office and there's the dinosaur trying to get in. That actually worked really well.
It does, yeah.
And minimised the fact that the dinosaur props were terrible. I can't wait till this is redone with good CGI.
Inevitably, when it comes to Blu-ray, this will be CGI to hell.
And part one will get the Planet of the Daleks 3 treatment.
This is one of those stories that when it's all polished up, this is going to be reevaluated as an outstanding classic. I'll state that now, before it's even happened. But I've always thought Dinosaurs is a bloody brilliant story, let down by the bendy rubber dinosaurs.
Yeah, in the same way as Axos is absolutely outstanding, let down by massive over-reliance on quite shonky CSO.
Do you really think so about Axos? I've always thought that it's got quite a good rep.
I love Axos. I absolutely, it's one of my absolute favourite Pertwees, if not my favourite.
It's really good. There's loads of stuff going for Axos. But I can't say that I've ever thought that the CSO was particularly bad or worse than any other story.
The scenes inside Axos itself, they're let down by the CSO.
Yeah, but they're not Invasion of the Dinosaurs CSO.
Oh, really. No.
Invasion of the Dinosaurs is the absolute nadir of CSO, largely because they've tried to combine film and videotape, and it's never going to work. And I've said this before, but the restoration team must have stabilised those images, because I seem to remember the dinosaurs bouncing all over the shop. These are rock steady. They're nothing like what I remember seeing, unless the memory cheats.
Memory always does, but no, I think this looks great. I think the colorization of part one was possibly a little disappointing, but that only goes to show just how good the colorization of other episodes have been. So, I mean, Planet of the Daleks 3, I know I keep coming back to it, but it's the other one that they never found a color source for. It's absolutely brilliant.
But in fairness to the DVD release, which is what we're watching, they don't pretend otherwise. Even on the sleeve notes, it says it's a low-quality recolorization of episode one. It's restored from the chroma dots. It's not a full manual recolorization. In future, you know they're going to take this and run with it and make it something absolutely stunning.
Yes, absolutely. And on that very enthusiastic build-up, shall we crack on with part six?
Bloody well think we should, with the best enthusiastic enthusiasm. Run, VT.
Operation Golden Age moves into its final stage. I do love these credits.
The
Pertwee shape doesn't work for me. I can appreciate just how much trouble people must have gone to and how it was simplified by the time Baker came along. But I grew up with Baker. That was my growing up Doctor Who. See, that just looks really chunky.
It's a dreadful, dreadful T-Rex. But in your head, interspace these with sort of Jurassic Park effects and Pertwee reacting the way he is. He's taking this deadly seriously.
Yeah, because he's a very good actor.
That is deeply shit. Oh, God.
Yeah, they're awful.
I can only imagine the faces of Paddy Russell and Barry Letts when they actually saw the monster videos. Oh, dear.
It's even got wobbly teeth.
There's an action sequence here of the Tyrannosaurus and the Stegosaurus having a fight, and the Tyrannosaurus' teeth are bending as it bites his neck.
Isn't that a Brontosaurus rather than a Stegosaurus?
It's not a Stegosaurus at all. Yeah, Bronto.
And a bitch slap with the tail.
Bitch slap. Take that, you Brontosaurus bastard.
Well, I mean, Tyrannosaurus Rex comes complete with limp wrists anyway, so...
I've got shit arms. Oh, stop it. Now, you see, Pertwee's there in his blue velvet, which I've always
with
quite
liked. With red trousers. Really doesn't with work. Red trousers with brown gloves. Not a good look.
But I really do not like that gabardine cloak. I don't like it at all.
And you're the Sherlock fan.
I know, but it's out of place. I know that you've said this about the later Doctors. They're too costumed, but that cloak does not go with that outfit.
Yeah, Doctor Who, to me, the costumes should look like an explosion in a charity shop.
Lee Sen Chang there. He's desperate to do his whole flashing eyes and mouth thing.
Oh, you had to go there. We will talk about that when we do Talons, when the randomizer lands on that. Oh, God.
Stop it. Rein it in. Disengage your politically correct brain. It was of the time, dear boy.
I was going to say, we might need Paul along to calm things down on that one.
Ah, Tom Baker at this point had undertaken a photo shoot and scandalised the press by his love of pubs. You won't just leave me here.
Don't worry, you're coming with us. Is this Martin Jarvis's second appearance after The Web Planet?
Oh, do you know, I'd forgotten about The Web Planet, of course. Largely because I've tried to edit it out.
It's fantastic.
I know you love The Web Planet. Possibly, when the time comes, I will revise my opinion, but it bored the shit out of me. Web Planet is one of those that I've never watched all the way through. It was so boring.
Web Planet, again, I mean, I love it, but you try and watch all six together, then, yeah, you will lose interest partway through. Of
London crawling with monsters and he just... Do you know, bear in mind, I'm looking at this through the eyes of someone who never watched these on transmission. The whole unit family thing, I can understand why it was so popular.
Yeah, absolutely. Pertwee, I think, is my mum's favourite doctor. But my parents never watched Doctor Who in the 60s because they were either medical students or junior doctors and didn't really have a great deal of time. And then when I came along, by sort of mid-Pertwee, they were watching it with me. The bits that I remember are the early to mid-Baker. Oh, go and make us all a cup of tea. It's really late Sarah Jane that I've got very, very clear memories of, and Leela, by the time I'm remembering pretty much all the stories that I got to watch. Over there,
Sergeant. Now, we've just got to the bit where Mike Yates reveals himself in full to Sergeant Benton and the Brigadier and the Doctor.
Really?
With the gold.
Is that an outtake?
Put it away, Captain Yates. You don't need to see that.
That's a very wobbly wall.
This is one of the few Doctor Who's where the sets have actually wobbled. There was a brick wall earlier. Just what are they going to do, Mike? They're going to roll back time.
The world used to be a cleaner, simpler place. It's all become too complicated and corrupt. So this is the middle bit of the Yates trilogy, isn't it? He got a bit brain-fucked in The Green Death. And then this is him at his most brain-fucked. And then he redeems himself in Planet of the Spiders. How?
The question really here is, they want to roll back time to a better time. How in the name of God are they going to fucking live if they take themselves back, let's say, to the Cretaceous Jurassic, you know, Eocene era?
But that's not what they're aiming to do. They're bringing the dinosaurs forward, but that's not the era that they're aiming back to. They're aiming back to sort of, they're kind of describing an early agrarian level of civilization where they can come along as the benefactors and teach people how to live properly.
Yeah, but without any sort of technology, they're going to sort of bloody... That's the implication.
But they do have the whole of London and a nuclear power plant.
That doesn't come across very well. It sounds like they're trying to take it back to before technology, because there's still going to be people around. Even if they take it back in time 100 years, there's still going to be people around.
Yeah, but there's kind of talk about going back to, I'm assuming, early Middle Ages, that kind of thing.
This is a really underrated story, though.
It is, and when you look at the plot, it's actually very City of Death. It's rolling back time in a protective bubble and going back to a... Okay, City of Death, it's an alien aggressor aiming to wipe out the entirety of the human race, whereas this is a human aggressor just aiming to wipe out the modern human race. I mean, the other thing is they've apparently got 200 people on their little ship thing. And the ones that we see being woken up probably aren't going to be great for repopulating the human race.
Well, we're looking at a lot of Crossroads extras there.
If you're aiming to repopulate, you don't want middle-aged people because they've kind of gone beyond their
reproductive best.
Yeah. I'm going out through that airlock so that you
can see. Stop it, we'll all... I wouldn't shag her.
They're kind of the BR, aren't they? Machine that's going to affect
time itself. It's got
And there must have been something in popular culture at the time about cryogenics, because within 2 years, there's three stories where you just have banks of people who are preserved. You've got this, you've got Ark in Space, and off to the side a little bit, you've got Planet of the Spiders and the people in all the... oh, dear God, that's awful.
That's actually one of the better model shots, it's the close-up of the T-Rex face.
But actually, is it any more awful than the Scarison in Zygons?
I mean, one is absolutely dreadful. And I'll say this unequivocally, the model... The model shots in this are the very worst we've had in Doctor Who. It's such a shame.
They're doing the level best that they can.
That's quite a good shot.
Actually, that's a nice shot.
That is a lovely shot, driving through the legs of the Apatosaurus. But imagine how much better it would be. Bear in mind, even for the time, these were shit effects. As Barry Letts and Paddy Russell have both said, they were horrifically disappointed with what they got back from the film company. The buildings' models are wonderful, but the dinosaurs themselves are terrible.
Now, that's the Stegosaurus. And as I understand it, one of the most requested monsters for the Doctor to come up against was dinosaurs from the public.
It's very difficult, though, to watch this through 1974 eyes. Would this have been tolerable at the time? Possibly. I don't know. Bear in mind, we're looking at it through Jurassic Park eyes, and this is shit. There's no getting around it. This is shit. I suspect the audience at the time were... They might not have thought it was brilliant, but I suspect they would have been more forgiving of it.
Possibly. Apparently, that's a spacesuit that came from Moonbase 3.
I can't see Carmen Silvera as anything other than René's wife.
Madame Edith. Oh! You really are a terrible problem to me. I hadn't realised that.
What did you not realise?
That the underground sets are the ones from Web of Fear.
Yes.
I never knew that.
Really? Even I spotted that. I thought that you would have done.
I'm not really a terribly good Doctor Who fan in terms of knowing all the background stuff. I generally just slap on the DVDs and watch them. I've learned so much about what's gone on by doing these podcasts.
I've got to say, though, the infotext, still the absolute pinnacle of infotext is...
The demons and the newspapers.
I'm blown away by that one. 2.5 years down the line since we recorded that, I'm still blown away.
Look, Brigadier, try and keep it occupied while I'm finishing this off, will you? Try and keep it occupied. Go and play fetch.
In fairness to this particular shot that's coming up,
those sets look fantastic.
They do, and this shot of the Brigadier sort of distracting the Triceratops in the underground, it's not bad. The model's not brilliant, but the composite shot isn't bad.
Yeah. I mean, once you've got used to the fact that the models are shit... You ready, Doctor? This is the last player. Actually, the way the shadows are being done on that is nice.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I'll tell you exactly which film posters there are. Oh, that Thompson logo. I remember that Thompson logo from looking through holiday brochures.
Oh, I vaguely... You're talking a long time ago. That sort of Una Paloma Blanca era.
Oh, when we do another YouTube thing, I discovered the German version of Aviva España that's absolutely hilarious.
Really?
Yes, Aviva España in German.
The trouble is, I speak German to an acceptable degree. It's just not a romantic language. I can't imagine Una Paloma Blanca sounds anything more than goose-steppy.
Aviva España.
Or that, even. I just can't picture it in German.
Which is what makes it marvellous.
Is it not a little bit...
Teutonic.
That's the word I was grasping for.
Should we get back to talking about the story?
Which you probably, yes. I think it's best if
you just watch. There seems to be a whole lot of young fellas, two middle-aged women, and Carmen Silvera.
Yeah, the whole sort of... I'm starting to wonder, actually, whether this whole Operation Golden Age thing has been set up by a lot of middle-aged women.
Now, this very, very definitely has the feel of a plan put across by an NHS committee.
Continue. Would that not be a yes, I'll...
No, I'm just distracted by the knocking out of Martin Jarvis.
Two fingers to the chest, it always works.
No, the NHS has multiple levels of management.
Really? It's almost as if everything that everyone's been saying for years is true.
Which actually kind of works okay, to be honest.
Does it work okay in the way that Kaplunk works okay?
No, most of the levels of management do actually do useful stuff. The problem comes, particularly with IT, in that the people who are making the decisions about which contract to go for don't actually know anything about IT.
Congratulations, Doctor. You're just in time to be present at the most important moment in the world's history.
On the contrary, I'm just in time to prevent an atrocity.
They're going to turn back time!
Well, this is actually quite a nice effect.
Yeah, it is. The Doctor is the only one that's not affected by the time distortion. And, yeah, that's very good, actually.
Yeah.
For the time.
It's something that happens a few times, because doesn't he end up the only one that can go into the Great One's cavern in Planet of the Spiders and the only one that can go into the Theseum Cave in the Mutants? And... Oh, well. They seem to have fucked that plan up. Back to their
golden age. They took the time machine back to the dinosaur age.
I still don't understand, Doctor.
No, their golden age wasn't the dinosaur age, it was the Middle Ages. It probably still wasn't a barrel load of laughs. Well,
the White Death.
Know anything about history or watch the Time Meddler.
Syphilis. Oh, there's all that to look forward to.
You see, people go on about Jodie Whittaker being ecologically preachy, completely forgetting about this, completely forgetting about Green Death.
Do you know, I'm not convinced that the ecology aspect of Jodie Whittaker is the forefront of the criticisms. It's the woke box ticking that up until that point, they'd never been. I mean, we've had 15 years of Doctor Who, well, more than that now, and it's all been, to a greater or lesser extent, very inclusive. The Jodie Whittaker era has been very much box-ticking, ram it down your throat, that is a thrust of the story with some sort of plot tacked on. And this is very much the other way around.
I remember when I was at university first time round, I did a lot of reading of old New Scientist articles from the early 70s, and it was very ecological. So it's probably reacting to the feeling of the era, which Barry Letts tended to do quite a lot. I remember reading that The Demons was based on the fact that Dennis Wheatley's books were having a big resurgence.
I mean, in those terms, comparing them, yes, there was a very, very heavy underlying message of ecology with the whole of the John Pertwee era. The problem I've got with the Whittaker era is that the message is overriding the plot, whereas in the Pertwee era, the message was underlying the plot. So with the Chibnall era, it's box-ticking all the way. Have we ticked the box? Yes, yes, yes. Have we remembered the story?
Well, no, let's not bother. No, I agree with you about that. I think that any of the 60s or 70s Who was done with a level of subtlety and thought and consciousness that is absent from their Jodie Whittaker. It's a bit like my problem with Sherlock versus Sherlock Holmes that superficially witty, but actually doesn't stand any depth of analysis at all.
It's such a shame, really, because, and I'll say this with a bit of a divorced view, that John Pertwee's era, I'm sure at the time, there were quite a few people saw it as, this is just veiled ecology. Look at what they're doing. They're not travelling in space and time anymore. It's all about green issues. But the stories were good. The problem that we've got with the Jodie Whittaker era, and I'll revise that to the Chibnall era rather than Jodie Whittaker herself.
Yes, I think that's a fairer way to do it, because when she's given something to work with, she grabs everything out of it that she possibly can. I think she's a very good doctor. I just think it's Colin Baker syndrome.
To me, and the best companion teams are one companion and the doctor.
Or companion pair. So if you've got companions that come as a double act, so Ian and Barbara, Ben and Polly, Amy and Rory, that works.
No, even Amy and Rory did not work for me. Amy worked better as a single than when Rory was added in.
If Rory had been there from the beginning.
He'd been there in the background, but so had Mickey. Mickey was there from the beginning. He didn't work as a companion. Rory worked in the background. He didn't work as a companion. They just don't know what to do with three. Three regulars in 45 minutes is too much. Even in those early days, when you've got the classic team, Dr. Ian, Barbara and Susan. Susan, locked up. Barbara, voice of reason. Ian, male lead. Dr., background character. If we're honest, certainly for that first season.
For the first season, yes. And the granddaughter character, so Susan, Vicky, Dodo, was there to drive plot rather than to resolve plot. So yeah. was there to be captured, to need rescuing, to fuck things up that the others had to come along and sort out. Very rarely did they actually get to sort things out themselves. And that role got subsumed with the Barbara voice of reason role, in the same way as the man of action role got subsumed with the doctor role outside of the 60s.
We might just have drifted a little way from Invasion of the Dinosaurs here.
Well, as this is an in memoriam, we should say something about the character of Mike Yates and the performance of the late Mr. Franklin.
Now, I've got to say that there is one outstanding performance of Richard Franklin, which I have always loved, and that is the Hornet's Nest series on audio with Tom Baker. Don't be grinding your teeth. The opening scenes of The Stuff of Nightmares, the very, very first Hornet's Nest audio, is almost exclusively Richard Franklin.
And he does his marvellous. He does his level best with a shit script.
I've got to say, in all honesty...
I've never liked Hornet's Nest.
The opening scene, the pre-credit sequence, if you will, as he arrives at Nest Cottage, that stuff is pure Richard Franklin, and it's really, really good. There's a couple of the companion chronicles that he did. They are really, really good. As a narrator, I really rate Richard Franklin.
Yeah, I'll give you that about the Companion Chronicles. I can't remember Hornet's Nest well enough to remember individual scenes. I remember hating it as a story. It's the whole, I am so much cleverer than you are, and I write so much better than you do. And
typical Paul Myers, unfortunately.
He was kind of a proto-Chibnall with a bit of talent. Can you imagine what Doctor Who would be like had Paul Myers been making all of the managerial and creative decisions? Can you imagine how awful that would have been?
I imagine I would have stopped watching about 17 years ago.
He kind of reminds me of a very old and dear friend of mine who is a very intelligent man, but he's completely tied up in the fact that he's a very intelligent man and doesn't really realise that other people around him possibly aren't quite as intelligent as he is, but they're not stupid either. So he's constantly fucking things up because he doesn't realise that people around him actually have brains. Paul Myers kind of reminds me of that in that it's all, oh, well, this is all very nice, but I could do so much better, without realising that there's been an awful lot of very competent and capable and clever people who've been involved in the production of Doctor Who in the past and have actually come out with some really, really good stuff, which is why we're talking about it pushing on 60 years later.
Agreed, entirely. So, raising a very tender glass of gin to the man, because he's been one of those Doctor Who companions who has been enthusiastic about his role in the past. Thank you very much for your contribution to Doctor Who.
In memoriam.
The Exton-Moss experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.